Welcome back, ladies. My name is Emily Thompson. You are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast, the show that helps you love your actual life so that you don't need to run away from home. To date, we have prevented 93 moms from running away from home. Those are the facts. They cannot be checked or verified, but just trust me on that. And how did we do it? Well, we helped them love their actual lives. You might not know it, but if you look around, your actual life is pretty great. We believe here that perfection is nonsense and peace is a perspective shift away. You know, a perspective shift that I am needing to have is that at my job, so I don't know if you know this, but a lot of nurses are pretty type A and wound up pretty tight. And so in my new job, I love it, but it's hospital and it's intense. So I think I just need to do everything perfect. The first time, I need to anticipate every need and everything needs to go just right. So can you imagine the anxiety that I feel? Perfection is nonsense at home. It's also nonsense at work. It's nonsense everywhere. And I just need to remind myself of that as well. So this week, ladies, I got to go to Ohio and meet up with my sister, Katie, who's now, I don't think she's said this yet, but she's moving to California and she is going to start going by Kate. So she's growing up so fast. I'm probably still going to accidentally call her Katie. So Kate and Rebecca, who likes to go by Rebecca, I met them. Well, I already knew my sister, but we had so much fun. In fact, we recorded several podcasts. So Katie is the assistant / we like to call her the assistant of the Mom Struggling Well podcast, also now a co-host, but she is the one with the plan. She's the one who keeps us on track. I'm going to be perfectly honest. I needed a break so bad that I on purpose didn't bring my microphone or my computer so that if Katie didn't bring hers somehow, we wouldn't have to do any work. And when I told her that, she gave me a really bad, mean face. Because she has a plan and a schedule. And so we wanted to go do like some touristy stuff. And she was like, first. So what she did was she set the recording microphone in the middle of the dining room table. And anytime that we said we wanted to go do something, she would just look at the microphone. So anyhow, we recorded and we had so much fun recording our first all together in-person recording. And guess what? It didn't work. So we had to do it all again. So that's what you'll hear next week is take two of a recording that we did all in person. So anyways, it was lovely to meet up with him. And honestly, ladies, just such an answer to prayer because I had been praying for some people who felt like just the right fit to do this show with. And honestly, this is just how good God is. I just wanted one and he gave me two. And so, yay. So that'll be starting here in October. And guys, the other amazing thing is that the lady named Katie Stump, who sang the Problem Solved song, which you all know and love. Some people think it's too long. Some people think that it's just long enough. I had been messaging her and asking her to record us a new song for all three of us that was about mom struggling well, specifically, and she wasn't answering my messages. She wasn't even reading them. So then we decided we were going to make her a music video. I don't know if you saw that on Instagram, but if you missed it, it was a very fine piece of performance art. So I hope you didn't miss it. But we sang to Katie a ballad that forced her to read her messages and she agreed to write us a song. And so there's going to be a new song, hopefully in November. And we're very excited. And I do want to thank everyone who told me that they messaged Katie Stump as well. So she now officially thinks we're all a little wackadoo and that's totally fine because we get a new song out of it. So we win. So my guest today is named Ashley Eland, and she wrote a book called Humankind, and the subtitle is How Reclaiming Human Worth and Embracing Radical Kindness Will Bring Us Back Together. And don't we need that now more than ever? Things are intense. We talk about all kinds of things, including what it's like to be a working mom, ways that she intentionally brings pause and rest into her life, and the work she is passionate about, which is building up people who have been broken down. Let's go ahead and listen to my chat with Ashley. Good morning, Ashley. How are you?
I'm so great, Emily. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So where do you live?
I'm in the Grand Rapids area.
Okay. I have never been there. Do you love it?
It's wonderful. It's a smaller, big city.
Okay.
And the summers here are amazing. We've been to 3 or 4 different beaches that are smaller, a little bit more intimate. Stop. The UP is amazing. The water's great. So we're just living our best lives here.
Yeah, you are. Oh, that's so nice. Okay. So tell me about your family.
My family is amazing. I have a husband. He's great. His name is Delwyn. He's a musician and a worship pastor at our church.
Okay.
And we have 3 fantastic kids. My daughter, Brooklyn, she's 5 and a half. She will for sure remind you of those extra 6 months. She's 5 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I call her our CEO. If Delwyn and I are the board of directors, she runs the show for sure. And then we have Miles, 4 and a half. He is our in-house entertainment. And then we have a little baby girl. Her name is Journey, and she's almost 2. She'll be 2 in December.
You have great kid names.
Thank you.
That's really fun. So a lot of the listeners to the show feel like if there's someone on, they've written a book, then it's kind of like, gosh, like I'm just at home. What am I even doing with my life?
Yeah.
Which we know is not accurate. Obviously, it's a really big deal to be raising human beings. So I just like to like level the playing field for them. And what are your kids doing that's making you like literally lose your mind?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is a picture of my son climbing our built-ins in our family room. So
everything's a ladder, isn't it?
Everything is fair game when it comes to climbing, scaling, jumping, hopping. So I have a tear in one of our really good couches. I mean, because he's just been jumping on it so often. Mm-hmm. He's climbed up the good bookshelves to get stuff off, you know, and to put his toys, to add his toys to the display. My daughter's, so the little one, she is climbing stairs. And so she's at the point where baby gates don't hold her back.
Oh, shit.
She's just doing, she's ninja warrioring everything in the house. And our oldest is, I mean, she's not really doing anything that's annoying per se, but she has gotten paint in the carpet downstairs because of her, she's our creative. She took out paint on her own, very independent, and just got all sorts of paint in the good carpet. So, I mean, we are struggle busing. we are on that bus for sure.
You're constantly watching to make sure they don't injure themselves or the things that you love.
Correct. I mean, if we make it to the end of the day and everyone is still breathing fairly normally, I mean, it's a good one. It's a good day.
For sure. Oh my goodness. So. Okay. So I have a question about your husband being a worship. He's the leader or he's like in the band?
Yeah. He's a worship pastor. Yeah.
I think there probably shouldn't be worship songs that you like hate. Do you know what I'm saying? But the song that I hate, that song about it's your breath in my lungs, so we pour out our praise. I just hate that song. I don't even know why. There's no good reason. It's not like it's not theologically sound. I'm a nurse. Yeah. I don't mind talking about lungs, but I'm just like, I hate that song. That's when I go to the bathroom every time.
What is it? Is it the repetition?
I have no good reason.
The sound of the words. We used to work in high school ministry. And there were kids who, when he played that song in high school ministry, mm-hmm. they would do these really demonstrative movements to the words. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why I particularly don't like that song, because I cannot sing it without seeing 14 and 15 year olds like doing kind of like a roll bounce to the song.
Interesting.
Because they're pouring out their praise. Pouring it out.
Yes. And I don't know if I think breath doesn't really feel like it pours. I don't know what it is that just is a disconnect for me. I don't like that song. But it's one of my friends. It's one of her favorite songs in life. So
we'll keep it. We'll keep it in the rotation just with the understanding that we've got some feels.
That's when I go to the bathroom and it's fine. I pour out my... Never mind.
we pour out other things.
Other things that actually pour. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's that. What would you say is the biggest struggle in motherhood? Like, you really thought you were going to nail it in this one area, but it turns out it's a disaster.
I am still coming to grips with the fact that my time isn't my time. I think, especially in my late teens, early 20s, through college and coming right out of graduating, it's almost like I was taught to be a good time manager, to use my time well, to kind of own my schedule, to fit in the things that give me life, you know, self-care, you know, friends, happy hour at one point, exercise, yoga, long walks on the beach, whatever. And then and there's something about having kids that just obliterates and takes a wrecking ball to everything that we've built up as moms in the way of how we've protected our time and tried to care for ourselves. And that has been, especially now, a consistent struggle for me to let go of my time almost by the hour and to say, I've planned for one thing, but we're just going to make extra snacks. Or I've planned for this, but nope, we're up at 2 a.m. I've planned to work out, but nope, can't do that because a kid's bust through the door in the workout room. Like, whatever it is, it is the constant struggle of trying to be intentional with my time and yet holding it very loosely.
Yes.
And I am, and in the moments where that doesn't go well for me, my patience runs low. I can feel myself building in anxiety, and it's hard. It's hard to work through those moments.
Especially because it's not like the things you're planning are selfish or bad. They are good. And then the things they have planned are often ridiculous and seemingly pointless, but really important to them.
Very small, like just the amount of effort it takes some days to pour a glass of milk and then to spill the milk and to clean the milk up and to pick up the stain in the carpet where the milk spilled. I mean, just very small things that should take 30 seconds or less end up taking up so much energy emotionally and physically.
That really is it. It's the emotional energy.
Yes, around the small task. That's right.
Okay. So what kind of helps you?
So I read this book by Ronald Rollheiser a couple months back, and it's called Domestic Monastery.
Oh.
Yep. Very short, quick read. Just downloaded it on my Kindle. And he talks about the home being a really sacred space.
Okay.
And obviously he didn't write this in the time of pandemic and quarantine, but it's really been meaningful to me for this moment because I'm seeing my house as a place of formation.
Huh.
Yeah. I am seeing each moment, each interruption as an opportunity to invite silence, stillness, and this internal peace versus an external contentment and being reactive to happiness externally. I'm finding each interruption from my kids as an opportunity to grasp joy and a type of presence that doesn't always come with just, you know, riding the roller coaster uptick where everything's going great. And so I've really held on to breath prayer in this season.
Yeah. So explain that for somebody who doesn't
know. So breath prayer is taking a word or phrase or sometimes even a longer passage of scripture if you read scripture regularly and taking that phrase and turning it into a prayer that you can say on your own to yourself without anyone else necessarily understanding it. But it's a way to recenter your breath, re-engage your breath. I think it's so funny how often I find myself not breathing well. Like no wonder I'm short-tempered. I'm not having regular, normal oxygen intake and my breathing is shallow. Yeah. And so as someone who's done yoga, but who also really integrates Ignatian spiritual practices, breath prayer helps me center my breath, come back to my physical body and to pray at the same time, no matter where I am. So for example, a really short breath prayer that I've integrated is to inhale and say, be still. And to exhale and say, and know that I am God. So it's be still and know that I am God. And to repeat that in moments of interruption has been amazing. Or to ask God in a moment, hey, Father, help me see my kids as you see them, as curious and as filled with joy and as spontaneous versus as I see them in some moments, as a nuisance or as inconvenient or as annoying. Yeah. So even that small prayer, help me see them as you do, has been really helpful too.
That's really great. Really, really good. It kind of reminds me of, is it Brother Lawrence?
Yes.
Practicing the Presence of God, is that?
Yes. That's such a good book too, yes. Practicing the Presence. So good.
So at the start of the coronavirus pandemic, leading brands and retailers, they canceled orders for about $2 billion worth of completed clothes in countries like Bangladesh, and they didn't pay them. The result of this was there were more than a million garment workers who lost their jobs and multiple million pieces of clothing that could have just been put in a landfill. But imagine if you could buy these clothes at a discount, support the factories and the workers, and save these goods from being thrown away. That is exactly what the people at LostStock.com let you do. So for as little as $45, you can buy a box of items from these canceled lines right from the factory. It's a twist on normal shopping. The contents of your box are a complete mystery. You can select some style preferences, like your size and your age and the colors that you like. But most importantly, for every box bought, Lost Stock provides a week's worth of support to a Bangladeshi family, which is so awesome. When the company launched in May, they had a target to sell 10,000 boxes, and they've already sold 116,000. What? That means they generated 116,000 weeks worth of support for families impacted by this horrible situation. And they've saved nearly 400,000 pieces of clothing from a landfill. So if you want to be part of this really cool solution to one of the many problems that COVID has started, head to LostStock.com/MSW and do some good. Buy a box of clothes and support a family at the same time. Again, that's LostStock.com/MSW. Okay, so tell me about the Ignatian, those words you just said.
Yeah, Ignatian spirituality. It's just Ignatius, like he integrated a lot of practices around prayer and disciplines that help us just engage our everyday lives in a way that's super meaningful. So a lot of contemplative practices where it's silence, stillness, breath, prayer, simplicity, a lot of things that we can integrate in our daily lives. But if you read about Ignatius, he just has a lot of really wonderful, what we would consider ancient at this point.
Sadly, because we need them so much.
I know, but they're so for right now. And so if you look him up, he's got some really good stuff that he's just introduced to the world and the ways in which he's followed Jesus that are really beautiful.
So I think all of our souls crave that.
Yeah.
And we don't even always know what it is, but it feels like an itch we can't scratch, and it's because we're going too fast. Mm-hmm. But I don't always know a great resource or a way to find it in a way that's simple enough that learning about it doesn't add more noise. Does that make
right.
sense?
Right. It does.
There's a lady, is her name Ruth Barstow? I don't know if I'm...
Ruth Haley Barton?
That. Mm-hmm. I've read some of her books I really like.
Yep.
But what else, where would you find more about that?
Yeah. So if you're a reader, another book that I really, really love, there's this woman, her name is Adele Calhoun. She wrote a book called Spiritual Disciplines Handbook, and then another one, a newer one called Invitations from God. They're short chapters that invite you to practices like rest or practices like an invitation to weep. I mean, there's so much that we're grieving and carrying in the way of disappointment in this season. Yeah. Sometimes we just need an invitation to weep and just say, it's okay. And God is in that with us.
Absolutely.
There's another one that she talks about is the invitation to admit I might be wrong.
Whoa. No, which, thank you. Just kidding.
It's like, I can skip over that chapter. But no, it's just a really wonderful, and you don't have to read it. You know, you can skip through chapters or really engage the one that's helpful for you. But if you're also a social media person, I'm pretty heavy on Instagram. There is a page called Liturgies for Parents.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That is amazing because really it's a daily breath. I think every other day is a breath prayer.
Okay.
So, for example, the one from a few days ago was, "Oh God, I can do this. You give me strength." But then there's some longer ones for just meditation. So as you're going to bed, to pull that up and to read through the prayer. And a recent one was a prayer for the overwhelmed. I mean, we can really engage our lives. It doesn't have to be sitting down and reading a book cover to cover. But I love the Liturgies for Parents page because it gives us short ways to pause and to interrupt the hullabaloo of our lives and to really invite God into that moment.
That's really good. I think that's just could be the single greatest thing we could do in this really quick generation.
Yes. Yes. We're so busy. And even in our pause, even when the world, in a sense, has been put on pause in different ways, like we still find ways to rush and to hurry through the day just to get to bedtime. And it's really a wonderful way to intentionally bring pause and rest and stillness into our daily lives.
I like it. Thank you so much for sharing all those. I am going to be doing some shopping when we get off the phone. Okay, so I want to talk about you being a working mom.
Yeah.
I'm also a working mom. And, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of mom you are going to have some feelings about how you maybe think the other side seems funner or that you are somehow failing. So,
yeah.
And also maybe a little guilt that you're a working mom and you love it, which is where I am. love it. It's amazing. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so the struggle is so real because I work for a church. I'm a pastor, and much of my work is very relational and creative, and it requires alone time. It requires space to think, and it doesn't bode well when I need to multitask while I'm writing a sermon or consulting with someone who's going through a tough time. And so I need space and I love what I do. I love what I get to do. And so I am struggling a little bit with the mom guilt of saying, no, am I okay to say out loud? I actually want my kids to find a good, safe environment for engaging, going back to school in the fall, because when they're happy and engaged socially, our life at home is better. Like as I'm working and as they're engaging with their peers, we're all better.
Oh, absolutely.
We're doing those things. But it feels so scandalous to want to say that out loud, especially now, because there's so much potential for judgment on either side, wherever you're coming from that conversation. And say like, no, why are you holed up and staying at home? That's a fear-based response. Or no, why do you want your kids to go out into the scary world of virus land that's not considering other people's health or feelings? And I actually think there's a third way into that discussion. And as a working mom, I'm trying to engage both my work and to be honest about how much I love my job and how much I love working and being creative and holding that in balance of how does my job and my work not just serve me, but serve we. How in this season can I rethink about how my job serves others and serves my family? So, yeah, I love work. My mother was a full-time working mom, and so I really saw her do this really well, to be present with me while also like leaning fully into her giftings. And I mean, she was top of the corporate ladder in her company. And so she was working late and leading in spaces where she was the one and only woman or woman of color. And I watched her do that. And in many ways, she set the foundation and the path for me to follow in that kind of footstep. So
do you remember feeling wishing she was home, or did you feel neglected and all the things that we worry about as moms?
I remember as a kid not feeling neglected. I remember feeling a little embarrassed for being the last kid to be picked up from aftercare sometimes, but it never felt like a hang up. It just felt like I don't want to be the last one. I mean, I went to an all girls Catholic school, and if your parents were late, you went to the little home where the nuns lived.
Oh, wow.
I didn't want to go to that place.
Yeah, that seems a little intense.
They were sweet, but I didn't want to go. But what she showed me, I mean, her work was featured in magazines back in the 90s. And
wow.
She made it to every single basketball or track sporting event. I mean, she made the time. So I was really in awe of her.
That's awesome.
She traveled around the world. And so even though there were moments where I was like, oh, I wish, you know, my mom could pick me up on time, like the rest of the kids at 3:30, she gave me more of a way to live and to be inspired by the larger world around me.
She kind of cast a vision, it sounds like.
Yeah, she did. She cast a vision and she showed me what was possible.
This episode is brought to you from one of our sponsors. Will You Be My Friend, published by Candlewick Press, is an enchanting tale of friendship. And it's a sequel to the best-selling picture book, Guess How Much I Love You. When Guess How Much I Love You was published in 1994, it started the now popular phrase, I love you to the moon and back. I know that my son and I always say that to each other, so it was fun to me to realize that's actually where that phrase started. So Guess How Much I Love You has sold more than 47 million copies. It has been translated into 57 languages worldwide, and now there's a sequel. In Will You Be My Friend, when little Nut Brown Hare is out exploring on his own, something extraordinary happens. He discovers a new friend, and now the fun can really begin. Will You Be My Friend is a new family classic that you'll love to the moon and back. It's available wherever books are sold. I want to say a special thank you to a longtime sponsor of The Mom Struggling Well, a mom struggling well herself, Allison from Prep Dish. For real, if you have not tried Prep Dish, I don't know what you're waiting for. In the Patreon Facebook group, the ladies are always talking about how much they love Prep Dish, how much easier it has made things for them around dinner time when those little jokers who live with us say, "What's for dinner?" and you actually know. It's a really good feeling. So here's how it works. Every week you get to choose from three healthy meal plans. You can do gluten-free, you can do paleo, and now you can even do keto. You will get an organized color-coded grocery list, a step-by-step prep day instructions, and then you just get it all ready. So all you have to do is get the groceries, prep the meals, and then you get to eat and enjoy. In our fridge this week is creamy Tuscan chicken and lemon basil shrimp with pecan praline cheesecake bites. Stop it right now. Amazing. So go to prepdish.com/MSW and you can try it free for 2 weeks. And that's all you're going to need to fall in love. Again, that's prepdish.com/MSW. What, if somebody is working and they're just kind of struggling with it, what, do you have any tips that make it a little bit easier for you either mentally, if you're feeling like bad about it, which it doesn't sound like either one of us feel bad about it. Like, I love it. My kids love it. Everybody's better when mom goes away for a little bit.
Yes.
At least in our family. But what would you say is helpful when you're starting to feel like it's a little bit out of whack, maybe?
Yeah. I've said this to multiple friends and I say it to myself almost daily. It's a phrase and it's just to be incredibly kind to and patient with yourself. Like, it is okay for every day to feel different and for you to change your mind about how you feel about work.
That's good.
It's not that we have to take the next 10 years and we have to kind of sign our name on the dotted line and sign up for years and years worth of the same experience or even the same attitude towards our work and our family life. I'm allowed to feel really energized and inspired one day about what I do and the next day feel like, man, this is tough. This is really hard. And I wonder how my kids are going to see me engaged here. If they're like, one of the things I fear is that my kids will resent the church because both my husband and I work for a church. Some days I feel that way. And I wonder, will that be at least one of their experiences? But I'm allowed to change my mind and to give myself grace in the moment. And then another practical tip I'd say is to take breaks when you need them. I unapologetically yesterday took a nap because I just said, in order for me to be the best version of myself in the second half of the day, I need a break. I could feel myself fraying on the edges and getting what I call a little crispy. I was getting crispy with my kids short. And I said, no, the best thing I could do right now isn't to push through. It's actually to rest.
It is so hard to know in the moment, especially when you are in a crispy place.
Yes.
You're not thinking clearly, so it's hard to know which choice to make.
Yeah, it is. It is very hard. And the one it's not the one gift, but one of the gifts right now that my husband has able to step in, like, he'll give me that look like, ooh, girl, like, you need
goodbye. Go.
Yeah. Take a lap. And sometimes we will literally take a lap around the block without anyone else in our family just to catch a breath.
Yes.
And then come right back. And you'd be amazed how even a short 5-10 minute lap around my block serves as a reset. It's almost like I talk myself off whatever ledge that was. But I have so much empathy for my friends who are single working moms too, because I realize that's a privilege and not every mom has that. And so what are ways in the moment that can serve as a deep breath, whether it's to step outside for a moment during nap time and to engage all of our senses and to engage gratitude in the moment. Like, right around me, if I look around for 5 seconds, what's one way that I can claim gratitude in this moment?
Yeah.
And to make that a discipline.
It's good, because I think sometimes we think, oh my gosh, I just need a moment. And then before we know it, we're on our phones. And that does not serve us. It is a moment, but that could be used way better.
Yes. So when you answer the question, what's life-giving right now?
Mm-hmm.
What might serve as a break doesn't always bring you life.
Mm, yeah.
Like, definitely. Me scrolling on my phone for 10 minutes isn't usually the most life-giving thing that I could enter into. And so to make that distinction between what feels like a break and what feels like life is, if we do the work ahead of time to really come to that understanding, I think will serve us well in the moments where we feel frayed.
Absolutely. Okay, so first of all, I want to say you worked with juveniles being tried as adults. Me too. And I've never met mm-hmm. another person who did that.
Yeah, I did.
So what was your role?
I was an intern at Human Rights Watch in Los Angeles, and I worked with one of the attorneys there who dedicated years before I got there to walking with families who were engaging these really incredibly hard cases where their kid was in the wrong place at the wrong time, perhaps sitting in a car when a crime was committed unknowingly. And I mean, these kids were up against life sentences. And so we were engaging the work of lobbying and petitioning courts to stay away from sentencing that would find 14, 15-year-old, mostly boys, in situations where they were facing life without parole. And it was very sad, but it was work I was really passionate about. And at the time, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I just knew I wanted to walk with people and be really involved with people. And it was a really incredible summer for me.
That's really cool. Yeah, I was really excited to read that. I was like, oh my gosh, I did the mm-hmm. same thing. I was a high school teacher for those kiddos.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, that's hard.
And I beautiful. Loved it. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I had no idea how much I'd love it. But so in your book, Humankind, oh my gosh, it's really such a good book, Ashley. I don't know if you know that. I'm just kidding. It's
such a good sister. I mean, sometimes you go back and forth. You're like, wait, I wrote this 2 years ago. Is this still relevant?
The
book writing process is so crazy, but thank you. That's really kind. Thanks.
Yeah. What I love about it, just for people who haven't read it, is that you talk about times when people were unkind to you, what that feel like, times when people were trying to be nice, but it just did not come off right, what that felt like. But then you talk about times that you were really mad at people that you had no business being upset with them about. And how did you sort that out? So I think especially during this time of all the unrest that continues to happen, and it's just hopefully will continue to keep happening until we kind of go somewhere with it, Lord willing.
Yeah.
I think it's important to, even like you said earlier, the practice of going, I might be wrong about this.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I wanted to talk about, I just want to talk about any of that. But you mentioned like a homeless lady that Jamba Juice who called you really bad names and said words and you didn't even hear some of them after. Because you kind of just go into your own place once things are really traumatic and you don't even remember some of what happened. But you were trying to help her because she was stealing and you wanted to help pay for things because you wanted her to have the things that she obviously needed. She was a homeless lady.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But you said something that I wanted to read back to you. It says sometimes moving closer and trying to do good and closing the gap between us and others doesn't always work out the way we want. And I think that's really important because sometimes if we get burned when we're trying to be a bridge, then we think, well, yep, that didn't work. And then we stop. Yeah,
that's right. It's very tempting to say, because my efforts didn't work out or pan out the way I wanted them to, then I must not be good at this work. This must not be my thing. And we opt out in moments where, especially in the work of reconciliation or anti-racism or justice work, if it doesn't go the way that we picture it going, we think something's wrong with us, or we feel like this takes too much energy. I'm not going to keep showing up.
Mm-hmm. Or it can kind of solidify, no wonder this isn't working.
Exactly. Exactly. And it can be really disheartening. And so I think that chapter for me was a lesson in showing up, even when my own pride, I mean, it was very embarrassing to be called those names in the middle of a store publicly, but for my pride to be hurt and to say, you know what, that doesn't change my mind about the importance of the work that I'm doing or about continuing to show up, as Brené Brown would say, in the arena. It's kind of just something we must get used to if we are going to be people who are finding ourselves in tough situations where there is brokenness, where there is pain, where there are factors at play that we might not even recognize or know about or be able to put language to. We have to know that our engagement is not predicated upon our comfort.
Mm.
Like me being comfortable isn't the prerequisite for showing up in the work of reconciliation. As a matter of fact, what I should get comfortable with is becoming uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a verse in Isaiah that I've just kind of used as like almost like my mission for my life in Isaiah 58:9, I think. It says, "You will be called rebuilder of broken walls and restorer of streets with dwellings." But I think what we underestimate about the work of rebuilding something that's been broken. I mean, if you've ever watched Fixer Upper or any of the home makeover shows, you got to show up in the middle of the demolition and be willing to get your hands dirty in the mess.
Yeah. And what happens every time? They always run into a snag they did not expect.
They did not expect it.
And they have the phone call with the homeowner going, "I'm so sorry. There's 7 million bees in your attic and it's going to cost $5,000.
Yeah, that's right. It wasn't in your budget. It's never in the budget.
Never
and
in the
somehow
budget.
They always get to the really beautiful house. And so, yeah, if we just want the after photo, we're going to give up early. But if we can say demolition and mess is a part of the process, and sometimes that demolition might be to my own pride.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are going to become more resilient in the way that we show up as advocates and allies and ministers of reconciliation. It's not going to harm us. It's actually going to make us stronger.
So tell me about, though, when it seems as though, and maybe it doesn't, maybe I'm just negative and you're like, no, so much hope is all that's radiating from you. But what it just sometimes feels too big and too dark to make a progress. And I feel like I'm not strong enough and I don't know enough. And so I'm just going to do my deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel that way almost every day, Emily. I feel like I'm not strong enough because I am limited. I'm not superwoman.
I guess I like to see just like the needle moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and that's when you think about how we operate as an American or Western culture, we crave progress, and not even just progress, but we need to see that progress in order to feel like progress is happening. And so I think, you know, this is where we come back to where we really are anchored and rooted in. If I live or die on the vision of progress, I'm going to come up against some really hard storms that might take me out.
Hmm.
Because there's some things, especially of the kingdom, that we can't see. You know,
that's
when
true.
You talk about a seed being planted, we can't see what's happening beneath the soil, and yet progress is happening.
That's
so
true.
If we don't see the tomato plant or the cucumbers that my daughter planted a few weeks ago sprout up the very next day, do we stop watering it? Do we stop exposing it to sunlight? No, we keep doing the small things over time that will create that progress. For those who are listening who are familiar with the Old Testament narratives, I mean, there are some folks who died in the wilderness between Egypt and the Promised Land. But they didn't see it. They didn't see the land flowing with milk and honey. And so in our context, like, yeah, I mean, I have a history of struggling with like postpartum and with depression and anxiety and some really dark moments where I felt like this isn't going the way I wanted it to. I don't feel right. Like this isn't, I don't feel like I should be a champion of justice or of peacemaking in this moment because I don't feel right in my own skin. Like, does that make me unworthy? Does that mean I can't show up? No, like the work is happening in me and my trust, because my trust isn't in my own effort alone, because my trust is in God and the fact that God can take our meager offerings of loaves and fishes and turn it into a miracle. Like that's where my trust lies. So it is an ebb and flow. It is a back and forth. I get it. It's feeling unworthy and then showing up and feeling confident, but the work is not predicated upon us feeling like we've done the right thing or done all we could. It's really steeped in trust in the unseen. And that's really the definition of faith.
Absolutely. You're right, Ashley. That's so good. So, so good to remember. I love your seed thing.
Yeah.
Just there's going to, I think maybe hopefully, Lord, please, that there's a lot of, you know, underground things happening right
yes,
now.
Yes, there are.
I'm hoping. Yeah. Okay, so you had another story that I got to say, I identify more with the lady who messed up in the story than.
Oh, yeah.
But so as a white person, there was a lady who came up to you in Chipotle. You had just been at a farm. You were looking rough.
Super rough.
You were digging in your purse to pay for the food that you had every ability to pay for. And she really wanting to help and thinking she was going to bless you.
Yes.
Wanted to pay for it for you.
Yeah.
And it was very hurtful to you because you can pay for it. You just had been at a farm. Yes. I am not homeless just because I've been at a farm and I am a person of color. So, I think that sometimes white people, we mostly don't know what to do, but we want to do something, but we are afraid of being hurtful or perceived as idiots. But also the fact is we don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's right. So it's so interesting about this woman. I think I put this in the book, but even her aesthetic, like added to the narrative, like she was wearing these really beautiful earrings that were in the shape of the continent of Africa. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, that layered on top of the almost like, I can't describe the way she was talking to me. It was the careful tone of her voice, almost like she was making sure I could understand her. Mm-hmm. Okay. It didn't feel mutual. It didn't feel empowering.
Okay.
It felt very paternalistic. And so this instance, this encounter with her, it felt like it took power away from me. And that's where I think the key lies. It's not that we can't show up with one another and engage these random acts of kindness with people of color or with me being a person of color with anyone else. Like, for example, the homeless lady at Jamba Juice. It was the fact that it felt like my dignity was on a pedestal for other people to see. The encounter was not private. It was very public. I mean, the cashier was standing there watching this go down. And it felt like what was centered was her charity versus my dignity. And so that's the distinction where, you know, I think we need random and unseen acts of kindness more now maybe we ever have. So in no way did I mean for that chapter to be like a, hey, don't approach anyone in public and do nice things for them. It was as we do these things, may we always keep in mind and in heart the motivation by which we're acting. And if I'm really trying to center my own action, then I should really take a beat and take a minute to say, why must I be centered? Or like, do I need to see, does anyone else need to see this?
Yeah.
If it needs to be almost a virtue signaling of sorts where other people can experience in which we're saying the right thing or doing the right thing to meet the moment, then that's something in us that I think deserves some examination. Mm-hmm. But I'd also say, Emily, that actual authentic relationship wins every time. And so in the public space where this woman didn't know me and I didn't know her. It was hard to grasp that interaction as one that was mutually beneficial because we didn't have a relationship. And so I'd say, start closer to home. Say, where can I bless and really pour into friends with whom I have already existing? Again, mutually beneficial is the key word there. Relationship where I can go deeper. And then in a moment where it's public to say, how might this interaction put someone else on the spot or actually make them more uncomfortable than my charity or my act of kindness would demand?
Yeah. Or how could you make it secret if it needs to be public? Secret. How could you not be?
That's right. Yeah. Yep. Like, I love when people pay for my coffee ahead of, in line of me at Starbucks. That's a perfect example of, like,
and you can totally do that. I think sometimes we don't realize, like, you can be at, you know, Burger King and say, I will pay for the person behind me. They already know how much it costs.
So you can be. Exactly. But that doesn't require putting them on the spot. And it doesn't, it's a really good discipline for you not to have to be centered in the action. That's good. Because they can't, like, thank you. They don't know who you are. So I think just evaluating how we show up where and how might our interactions actually take away versus empower.
What's a good question for someone who wants to start a conversation about someone else's experiences that feels awkward and uncomfortable? Is it just to say, like, how has, you know, is if it's involved with racism or injustices or things like that, just to say, if somebody really doesn't know, is it rude or okay to say, are these experiences that I'm hearing about, is this been true to your personal experience or where are you at with that? Or is that something that people are like, will you please stop talking about this? I'm so sick of it. Or is it welcomed? Or is it just depending on the person?
It depends on the person, depends on the day, depends on the relationship. I'd say for my friends, people I'm in actual relationship with, we've talked about other things besides racism. We've talked about our families. We've talked about our neighborhoods. We've talked about school. We've talked about
our health. So we don't need to start there.
Yeah.
Feels a little, maybe.
If the first deep conversation you're having with someone is around race, then maybe there's a better person to talk to. And so I'd say if you have a relationship with that person, to say, hey, like, I saw this headline. I want to check in on you, but I also want to be really sensitive to giving, like, that this could be a really heavy time. It doesn't have to be now, but if you're willing, I'd love to talk to you about how this is impacting you. So what you're doing in a statement like that is you're saying, I'm not putting you on the spot to have to answer me right this second. Mm-hmm. I've really appreciated when my friends have said, I don't need a response.
Yeah.
I'm checking on you. I care about how this might affect you. And I don't need a response if you don't have the energy.
Yeah, that's good.
And to say, but if this is something that you want to process out loud, like, I'm here and I'd love to hear how you're doing.
That's really good.
So it's giving, it's putting the ball in your friend or acquaintance's court to say, I don't need anything from you, but no, I care about you. And if you want to process, we can do that another time. And there's so many people who are right now, like, putting their experiences on social media and blogs, you know, in op-eds and different news outlets. And so, yeah, not every person of color, or very recently, not every Black or Indigenous person of color is going to have a similar experience. I mean, even regionally, like, if you're in Portland right now, you're experiencing things way differently than I am in West Michigan. If you grew up in the South, you've got a different vantage point and perspective on, for example, the Juneteenth holiday that just passed than if you lived in the North. But for the more national headlines, it's really great to engage and say, you know, I'm aware that this is happening. I don't require anything of you. I'm here. And if that person is willing to say, hey, just a heads up, if we're talking about this, are you okay if I ask you a couple of questions? Because I don't know, you know?
Yeah. Okay. It's been interesting when I've reached out to my friends who are people of color and ask them, not necessarily ask them questions, but say, hey, I'm thinking about, because I did this on, you know, Juneteenth. And I was like, I don't even know, what am I supposed to say? Am I supposed to even say anything? But happy Juneteenth, if that's a thing you say. Like, what is happening right now?
It's like, I don't know. It's happy, but it's like, recognize Juneteenth doesn't flow off the tongue.
I know. This day. it's so weird, but nobody's gotten mad at me.
Oh, good.
So that's nice. But I love the idea of balls in your court, reaching out, care about you. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's really, it all comes back to relationship. And if you're in relationship, it's not only you approaching the desire to ask questions, but hopefully, you know, you'll also be received with grace. And so it may not be a safe space because you're going to be talking about hard things, but it will be a grace-filled one. And that makes all the difference.
That's really good. Mm-hmm. I like that. Well, thank you for talking to me about all that, by the way, because
of course
it's not my easiest favorite thing, but it's important.
It's not easy. Yeah.
So before we're done though, I wanted to ask you, what is something that you can't stop talking about right now?
Oh my gosh, Emily, I'm obsessed with the Hamilton movie.
You know, everyone says it. I've not seen it, but I need to because it's a thing.
Should I pick something else?
Oh, no. I don't mean everybody. I mean, like, in my life, I'm hearing a lot about it. Yeah, I don't mean, like, you're the 17th person who has answered the question that way. No, that's not what I meant.
Yeah, the Hamilton film. What's funny is because my husband's a musician and I grew up playing music. So our family's a very musical one. We listen to music almost every night at dinner. Everything from, I mean, we were supposed to see Elton John in concert over the summer and that got shut down.
Oh, my goodness.
We love concerts and our musical taste range from, I mean, I grew up in Texas, so all the way from country to 80s rock to yacht rock to rap to gospel. So we love music. And when the Hamilton CD came out, and I can't remember, this was years ago, it must have been 2 or 3 years ago, we listened to the whole soundtrack before we even thought about showing up for the show. So we like knew all the songs. Then we saw Hamilton in Chicago. And then when Disney Plus announced that the film was, I mean, just coming at us on July 4th weekend, I mean, I've seen it. I've watched it four times since July 4th.
Do you think it was really fun to know all the music before you saw it?
Oh,
would you recommend that?
Especially because I would highly recommend that because they're very different variations of rap in the show. And so it's almost like you need to understand what they're talking about before you show up.
Okay.
So you're not distracted by the really fast rap cadences, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was helpful. It was helpful to know the words and to even watch the film with the captions on was helpful too.
Yeah. I bet.
Oh, that's what they're saying. That half second right there when they're talking really fast. So
fun.
It feels like it's appropriate for our current moment. There's so much in it that gives me hope about where we could be headed as a nation, but it also is just a really beautiful piece of art as someone who appreciates art and is inspired by other people's creativity. Yeah. I mean, Lin-Manuel Miranda and then like Renee Lise Goldberry, like just all these amazing people who are killing it on stage and it's just awesome. So I love Hamilton. Right.
That's so good. Well, tonight is movie night at the Thomas House. So we might just need to do that. I don't have Disney Plus, but I'm sure I could get a free trial or something.
Oh, of course. You can just get that free trial, you'll fall in love, and that's how they get your money.
Oh, Disney. So funny. Actually, it's been such a joy to talk to you, and thank you for this really beautiful, really beautiful, heartfelt book.
Oh, thanks, Emily. I've loved our conversation, and I just am praying blessings and joy and peace over you and your family.
Thank you so much. Ladies, I hope you loved this conversation with Ashley. I know that I did. I would highly recommend her book, Humankind. It is full of great essays that will definitely give you perspective shifts. So how are you going to struggle well this week based on what Ashley said? Maybe you try using breath prayer. That is something that all of us can employ to help us just remember to connect with God. Remember that spiritual things that are unseen, that stuff is more real than what feels urgent and like an emergency in front of us. Maybe you check out some of the spiritual disciplines books that Ashley mentioned. You can find those at momstrugglingwell.com in the show notes. Maybe you struggle well this week by remembering what Ashley said about how we don't have to feel the same way every day. We're going to have highs and lows. We are allowed to change our minds. We are allowed to take breaks when we need them. We are people. Sometimes we treat ourselves like we are machines or something, but we're not. Maybe you struggle well this week by continuing to circle back to a relationship that is not going the way that you hoped or had thought that it would go. All right, ladies, I'm going to go ahead and pray for us as we start this new week. Lord, I pray that you would help us to be kind to people. I pray that you would help us to suspend our judgment about the way that we think they are based on the sign in their front yard or the clothes that they're wearing or the car that they drive. Like, things are so intense and divisive right now, Lord, in our country. And I know you know better than any of us, but it can feel like there's just landmines everywhere. And so I know what some of us want to do is shrink in and just kind of avoid it because we don't want to be yelled at. So I just pray that you would help us to continue to make connections with the people close to us. The only way to make a difference is not on social media or in some other big public way like we think sometimes. Lord, I pray that you would enable us, empower us, embolden us to make a difference in our sphere of influence, the place that you have put us for such a time as this. I pray that you would help us to keep showing up and keep being kind, even when everything else around us seems to be somewhat of a disaster. Lord, thank you that you are the one who holds all things together. You have put us here in this time for a reason. So I pray that you would just help us to walk out what that reason is. In the name of Jesus, amen.